The Laura Murphy Show, episode 40.
Welcome to The Laura Murphy Show, the podcast that analyzes financial markets from the perspective of Austrian economics and Nelson Nash's infinite banking concept. Listen and learn as your hosts, Robert Murphy and Carlos Lara, explain how you can be part of building the 10%.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Laura Murphy Show. I hope you enjoyed the previous two episodes, episodes 38 and 39, which were an interview we did with Nelson Nash, the founder of IBC, the Infinite Banking Concept. So if you missed those, by all means, go to the archives and check them out again. So that would have been Laura Murphy Show's episode 38 and 39. But now we're on episode 40 and we are talking here. I have Carlos as usual. Carlos, how's it going?
It's going good, Bob. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. This is going to be a little bit of an unusual episode because what happens is, folks, in case you are new to this show, Carlos occasionally will just go off and just do a bunch of research on some particular topic. He gets up to speed, then he comes back and reports. And so that's the format we're going to adopt in this particular episode. So our topic for today is the Department of Labor ruling, I guess you'd call it, regarding fiduciaries and financial advisors and their role with the public. And so there's a major change that's actually kicking in June 9th, 2017. And so that's what the topic of this is going to be. Let me just give you some background. We did a podcast episode in episode 14 of the Laura Murphy Show, which was back in May of 2016 when this stuff, you know, was first being proposed and people were really concerned about it. So we did an episode back then. In the Laura Murphy report, Carlos did an initial analysis back in the April 2016 issue of that. So if you like the Laura Murphy Show, which you're listening to right now, the podcast, I would encourage you to peruse the samples we have at our website of the Laura Murphy Report, which is, of course, our print publication. It's electronic, but it's in the visual form of what we do here. What we do at the Laura Murphy Show is sort of just like the boiled down version of some of the things that we cover in the Laura Murphy Report. If you want to see more, go to our website, which is lauramurphy.com, and that's LARA-Murphy.com, and you'll see all the information there, the free issues of the Laura Murphy Report and so forth. Okay, with all that preamble out of the way, Carlos, first of all, for somebody who just has no idea what we're even talking about, what is this big thing that's kicking in on June 9th of 2017?
Well, Bob, I'm glad you mentioned that article that I did last year back in April, because I've gone back over that article and realized that it's pretty much on the money. I think if people can access that particular article, go back and read over it, it's pretty much covers the whole Department of Labor ruling and what it consists of. And so, and then of course, with us having done the podcast, I don't want to go back over that same material. I want to focus more specifically on what is coming up next week. You know, on June the 9th, this law, at least a big part of it, goes into effect. And I want to say this with a lot of emphasis, that I do believe it will change the entire financial services industry and every financial professional that works in it, which are hundreds of thousands of financial professionals. So just to kind of do a quick review of what all this entails and bringing everybody up to speed, what we're talking about is the Department of Labor's oversight over the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, known as ERISA, which came into law way back in 1974. And the whole purpose of that particular ruling was to protect tax-preferred retirement savings for all of Americans. And Bob, I want you to know that this covers an immense amount of retirement packages and programs. This is going to cover government pension funds, what they call the defined benefit plans, what they call the defined contribution plans, and then, of course, the ones that are a lot of us are most familiar with, which are the government qualified plans referred to as the 401ks, the 403bs, the 457 type of plans.
Okay, let me stop you right here, Carlos, to make sure people get what's going on. So in the 70s, there was this ERISA, which is an acronym, E-R-I-S-A, about employee retirement savings accounts. This went into effect, and that is the genesis of what we now know of, where people have ways you can, quote, save for your retirement in a tax advantageous way. Thing. And so the normal people, like if you're in an educational sector, it's the 403B nonprofits and stuff. Other people with standard 9-to-5 jobs, it's their 401k, that kind of thing where, oh yeah, I'm going to be able to save for my retirement in this thing where it's better tax treatment than if I just went off and did it on my own. That's the general mentality. While the gurus say, oh yeah, go ahead. Of course you max out your 401k and that sort of thing. So that's what's been in place. And now you're saying this DOL ruling or oversight ruling that's going to kick in on June 9th, it concerns this area of its oversight of the financial professionals.
That is correct.
Okay.
And we probably need to underscore, Bob, that this is a huge, huge sector of retirement funds. And when I say huge, as of 2015, it was stating that it encompasses $25 trillion. And so this is no small, piece of financial money rolling around. It's pretty significant. And it's not impossible or out of line to say that most financial professionals, you know, are in this arena in one way or another. And so what I am particularly have come to understand as I've read through and researched all of this, the financial professionals that fall under ERISA, the Department of Labor seems to think that they are much more qualified to be able to give retirement advice to the general public than those financial professionals that, you know, don't come under ERISA. And so one of the big defining issues there is that financial professionals that are specifically under the auspices of ERISA and ERISA advice to people, they are more subject to much more stringent rules and are actually known as fiduciaries. And that term fiduciary means that these financial professionals are supposed to be acting in the best interest of the client and not so much trying to sell financial products that are going to benefit them. And so financial professionals coming under that oversight know in advance that they are fiduciaries and obviously operate under the thinking that they are supposed to be doing this. Whereas there is one segment of retirement money, which consists of about $7.6 trillion worth, that is nestled in what we know are the individual retirement accounts. Now, this is an area that came a little later than the 1974 Act, and ERISA has somewhat of an oversight over the individual retirement accounts, but not complete, meaning that the financial professionals that operate within that arena can't really be held accountable in the same way that financial professionals are held accountable under the ERISA plans.
Okay, again, let me stop you, Carlson, paraphrase some of this and make sure you agree so people aren't getting lost. So you're saying, with the original, so for one thing is, because tax rates were high, people are getting crushed. Inflation was starting to pick up in the 70s. So everybody wants to get into the stock market because, hey, you know, how else are we going to plan for retirement? Everything else is getting crushed by inflation. So everyone's getting pushed into the equities. And but, hey, there's these high tax rates. Because remember, this is in the 70s before the so-called Reagan Revolution bringing down tax rates. I mean, top marginal rates were up in the 70 percentile range. Is ridiculous. So what they do? Oh, well, we'll set up these special exceptions, as Nelson says, you know, the Congress creating an exception to the problem it created in the first place. So you can now save in a much better tax environment, tax treatment, as long as you do it under these carefully laid out guidelines and so forth that the government gives you permission to do. And so if you were some regular guy in a standard, you know, working for a big Fortune 500 company and you were getting your regular company's 401k standard retirement plan and you call up Merrill Lynch to pick, you know, what particular thing you're going to put your money in the options your employer has set up, you're saying that guy at Merrill Lynch or whoever it is, he's a fiduciary. He was totally under the ERISA regulations or whatever. And so he had to act in your best interest. And it was very circumscribed, the kind of stuff he could say to you. But later on, when then Congress alters it and allows people to have an IRA, an individual retirement account, where they can also get special tax treatment, but you're not part of like the herd. You're doing it on your own. You're investing your own money in your own places where you want to. You're still talking to professionals to get advice. Because what do you know if you're a mechanic, you don't know anything about how Wall Street works, so you got to talk to other people. But you're saying, Carlos, before all this happened, this recent DOL ruling, before, the idea was those people who are just talking to the guys with their IRA accounts, those financial professionals were much freer to say all kinds of stuff, whatever, because the regulations weren't as intense. Am I getting the spirit of this right, at least?
Yes, I think you said it correctly. And I think it's important, again, to recognize that when we speak of individual retirement accounts, that particular sector has the largest amount of retirement assets from that entire $25 trillion pool. In other words, of all the different kinds of plans that are in that retirement pool, the individual retirement account has the largest amount, $7.6 trillion. All right. So it's important to recognize that because ERISA realizes this. And it's because there's been so much money that's coming out of the ERISA type of plans into these individual retirement accounts. And the reason for that, Bob, is either people are starting to, you know, get away from the stock market, you know, selling out of there, or, for example, they are changing jobs and they have a 401k, and maybe instead of moving it to their next employment place and having it rolled over there, a lot of people are choosing to just roll it into their individual retirement account. And what I'm saying is that the Department of Labor is saying that once it rolls into that individual retirement account, the financial professionals that are in that arena, you know, that are selling in and out of that arena, are not held as accountable, you know, to the types of things they sell. And the Department of Labor is saying those individuals must also now be designated as fiduciaries in the same way as the financial professionals under the ERISA-type plans. And this is the whole reason for this ruling, is to answer the question, who is a fiduciary? And so the answer to it is, well, if you're having a conversation with any member of the general public about having to do anything to do with retirement, and retirement investment products, the DOL wants those people to be now classified and defined as fiduciaries. And in doing so, now they fall under the same rules and oversights as the rest of the other financial professionals under ERISA.
Yeah, let me stop you. Sorry. Again, folks, this episode, just Carlos is going to be saying stuff, and I'm trying to make sure you're not losing him. So this confused me. This might be silly to you, Carlos, because you have way more experience. But I used to think fiduciary was an adjective, and so it confused me when they're using it as a noun, and they kind of go hand in hand because, you know, somebody say, oh, you have a fiduciary responsibility. It means you have the responsibility of a fiduciary. And so a fiduciary is a person. And so here I just grabbed from Investopedia's definition here. A fiduciary is a person or organization that owes to another the duties of good faith and trust, the highest legal duty of one party to another. It also involves being bound ethically to act in the other's best interest. Okay, so if you set up a trust and then you have a, you know, somebody running the trust on behalf of some other person, you know, clearly you don't want the guy running the trust overseeing it to be trying to profit from it personally, right? The whole point of it is, oh, no, you're supposed to be acting in the best interest of the beneficiaries. And so that's kind of the deal here is that Carlos is saying for the government to say, you, Mr. Financial Professional, when you're dealing with your client in this particular capacity, we expect you to act as a fiduciary. That's a very high legal standard in terms of the way you're supposed to behave and how what you do and say should be putting the best interest of the client, you know, first and foremost is what you should be going through your head.
That's exactly right. You know,
well, I'm sorry to interrupt. Let me just add, because I'm sure some people hearing this kind of stuff for the first time are going to be saying, well, wait a minute. What does that mean? Are you saying before if somebody told me what wasn't in my best interest, the government was fine with that? I mean, can you maybe just spend a few moments on that, Carlos? Because that probably does strike people as odd. Like, what, this is a new thing that somebody that's my financial advisor is supposed to have my best interest at heart? What the heck? I thought that was the default.
Okay. Well, that's a good way to present it, Bob. So let's make sure we understand the whole scope of this. That doesn't mean that the financial professionals that were under the auspices of ERISA, you know, were just clean as a whistle either. Okay. As we all know, a lot of the financial products, you know, involved under these retirement plans are in mutual funds. And oh my goodness, you know, who doesn't know that mutual funds, you know, have more recently been exposed as basically having huge amount of hidden fees. And so they're basically destroying retirement accounts, okay? And so it's not as though the financial professionals under ERISA, you know, are pure and innocent either. They too have been selling a lot of financial products that are now coming out as not being in the best interest of the client, you see. And so in a way, what the Department of Labor is trying to do, in a sense, it reminds me so much of the Dodd-Frank Act, you know, in that they're trying to make it an Investor Protection Act. In other words, a blanket overhaul of the financial services industry so that financial professionals can be held accountable in all these financial products that they sell, always acting in the client's best interest and not be selling financial products that create a conflict of interest, whereby it's benefiting more the advisor than the client. So the biggest distinction here, Bob, is that up to this point, those financial professionals, you know, working under the ERISA plans, you know, could literally be held accountable, you see, if they did something incorrectly, if they operated in their own self-interest, okay? Whereas these financial professionals in the arena of the individual retirement accounts didn't fall under those strict accountability rules. And this is what they're now trying to say, is that if you're in that arena, the individual retirement account arena, those, and you're having discussions with the public, you know, about retirement accounts of any kind and financial products to go into retirement accounts or take them out of retirement accounts into other types of financial products, then you are a fiduciary and you will be known as a fiduciary and you will fall under these guidelines now.
Yeah, so you touched on a good thing there, and I do want to circle back and get to the nuts and bolts of this just so people know exactly what's happening. But while we're discussing this issue of the nature of this ruling or just the government's whole approach to this, so folks, don't misunderstand. Carlos and I certainly are not endorsing all these things, and as he said, the government can, of course, call it what it wants and say, oh, we now have this standard in place that the financial professional is going to act in the best interest of the client. We're here to protect you. Well, that doesn't mean that actually happens in practice, right? Just like the government can pass something called the Patriot Act, that doesn't mean all true patriots necessarily support what's in that thing, right? The government can put whatever label it wants on stuff. Often it's the opposite of what the name suggests. So the same thing here, as Carlos was saying, financial professionals who are urging their clients to get into the stock market, mutual funds and what have you, doing the quote, you know, responsible, respectable thing in 2007 and then everything fell apart. You know, it's not like there was mass ability of everyone to get money back from their financial professionals who had misled them. They would just say, well, yeah, the stock market crashed. Go figure. You know, who could have seen that coming? So there is all that element that to say to act, you know, it begs the question of, well, what's the best interest of the client? You really want to have the government ex post define what it is. So there are all those thorny issues. But for right now, this is such a complex thing. We're going to put aside our own views as to whether this is a good or a bad idea or the problems with it. And Carlos is just, because he's done a lot of research and been on conference calls with people and so forth. So he's just here trying to explain what the heck is going on, just so you're not caught flat footed and you understand, if you're reading other commentaries on this, what's going on. Okay, Carlos, back to you.
Okay, so maybe the next big, most important change that we need to discuss here that's coming up next week is, you know, what actually constitutes investment advice? You know, what does that mean when you give people investment advice? And the best way I would describe that is any kind of conversation with an individual in which you're trying to tell them to, you know, buy something or sell something, or maybe not to buy or sell, just to hold it. Don't do anything with it. It could constitute telling people how to manage, you know, certain investments. So all of those kinds of things, you know, that where you're advising people, you know, what to do with these investment products, you know, falls under the category of investment advice. Now, the picture I'm trying to paint for everybody is that this market is so big, $25 trillion, that I almost have to say that 95% of financial professionals are having conversation with individuals who have money, you know, invested in some of these retirement programs. So it's almost like, you know, all financial professionals in one way or another are having these conversations with people talking about their retirement plans, because it just represents us a huge pool of money. And so when you're having those conversations with people about this type of investment product versus this type of investment product, you are actually giving advice. And this is where the Department of Labor is saying, if you're doing that, you're a fiduciary. Okay, so here again, when we talk about what does it constitute? Well, it's any kind of direction that you're giving directly to members of the general public. And again, to emphasize, it covers such a wide pool of money and so many people are involved that it brings in almost all conversations having to do with it.
Okay. So again, for people to stay on top of this, so what is changing is they're expanding the scope of who's considered a fiduciary. And so now, Carlos, is it correct to say anybody who gives financial advice directly to a client? Is that the new standard, or is that too broad, what I just said?
That is maybe too broad, but what I'm trying to emphasize, Bob, is that I'm going to say that 95% of the conversations that you're going to have someone does cover retirement accounts, you see. Now, here's another way to put it. If you're trying to say, for example, as a financial professional, sell an investment product to somebody and they have money somewhere and it's not in a retirement account, well, you're in good shape. You don't even fall under the auspices of any of this. And you stop to think, well, where could that possibly be? Well, it could be a lot of things. I mean, somebody may sell a piece of property, you see. So he's coming out of a piece of property that he's just sold, and there are funds, and now he has funds to invest in a financial product that a financial professional may guide that individual to buy and tell him why he should put the money there. So that's an example of something outside of this arena. But if you're talking to someone, you know, who has money in one of these retirement accounts, any one of the ones that I've mentioned, and that individual is wanting some advice on whether he should to get out of that, or if I get out of that, how would I do it? What's involved? What kind of taxes do I have to pay? This, that, any of those conversations in order to buy the financial product that this financial professional wants him to buy. I mean, at that point, you're a fiduciary.
Right. Okay. So the reformulation is more specifically things that have to do with retirement accounts and, you know, these tax qualified plans. And so the DOL ruling is expanding and saying it's not just the guy at Merrill Lynch who's dealing with somebody who's at a you know, Fortune 500 company in his company's 401k plan, and he's talking about moving funds to this or that. It's saying, you know, anybody, even talking to the IRA people. But you're saying, Carlos, it's broader even than that, because even if you're selling something that by itself has nothing to do with these tax qualified plans, if you're going to get the money from one of those, you know, if you, the financial professional, are saying to the client, well, yeah, I think you should get this product right here. And then the client's like, okay, well, I don't have the money. He's like, oh, well, you know, instead of contributing to your 401k, why don't you just shift that money over here? Am I getting warm at least? Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Okay. Okay.
So we could bring up another important question here and ask, well, what products are not affected here? And that's another way to put it. What financial products are not affected? Well, here again is that it almost affects every financial product, because what we're talking about here is any financial product that has an investment component in it. So any retirement products, any products that can be used for retirement, you know, that has an investment component to it, you know, is a product that's involved here. So it's almost like saying, what financial product is not involved here? And the answer is, it just covers just about everything, you see, because, you know, you have to ask, well, what is there that is not, that does not have an investment component in it? Almost everything does has an investment component. So this whole idea of defining what a fiduciary is, who's a fiduciary, which we've kind of covered. Another one, you know, what constitutes advice? Because in giving advice, when it comes to the retirement arena, I mean, you are going to be classified as a fiduciary. And then when you start thinking, well, what kind of products are involved here? Well, it's almost like saying, well, what's not involved? Now, people may be asking, well, does this also cover insurance products? Well, of course it does, because all insurance products, you know, have an investment component in it. And so the insurance products are not going to be excluded from this. When we start to think about maybe, for example, like the annuities that were being sold, and that's another thing that we saw a lot of moving out of the stock market type of financial products into these individual retirement accounts, and a lot of annuities were being sold, which is an insurance product, see? So these things like a variable annuity, things like an index, universal life annuities, which were big selling items there for several years. Although because of the advent of the Department of Labor ruling, index annuities have been on the decline. Same thing for fixed annuities. They also are involved. Now, when it comes to the other financial products, the only one that doesn't have an investment component in it is term life insurance. So that one for sure is not involved, but all the others do. universal life insurance does, and so does whole life. So that's why I keep saying that, you know, it's almost like, well, what isn't involved in a financial product? It covers just about the whole gamut and includes even the life insurance industry.
Yeah. And so the reason term doesn't is that it's not accumulating like an asset that you could use later. Is that the angle?
That's exactly right.
Okay.
That's exactly right. Now, having said all that, you know, covered those three big points, which I think will help the listeners understand what is the big deal here. I don't really think financial professionals are going to realize how big it is until this thing goes into effect next week, but it's going to affect all financial professionals. And as the paperwork starts coming through, and because I said there's paperwork involved here. In other words, when the rule goes into effect, there's going to be certain paperwork that financial professionals are now going to have to be filling out. And the only way to get out from under any of this is to be able to state very clearly at the point that they're selling a financial product to a member of the general public, they're going to have to state very clearly that, you know, this did not involve any kind of discussion having to do with anything having to do with these qualified plans. You see, that's the only way they can come under it. But they've got to be able to state that in writing now every time prior them selling the actual financial product. And that's a big change. So in order not to fall under the auspices of this new ruling, they're going to have to make that very clear when they're submitting the paperwork for an individual to purchase the financial product that the financial advisor is recommending. At the same time, if they are recommending, if they have had a discussion with the individual and it involves retirement, and they're also going to have to make that clear in the paperwork before they actually, actually put that product through. And the biggest point there is, Bob, and this is why I think it's going to affect everybody, is that, you know, the client now will have to sign off on that paperwork in order for it to be implemented. Now, if you'll just stop and think about that for a minute. In other words, the paperwork has to be shown to the client, the prospective client, and the individual has to say in that paperwork, I am going to make this much money off of selling you this product. And it's got to put it down on a piece of paper, not just the first payment, but any recurring fees, commissions, or whatnot. And the client is going to have to sign off on that. And when he does, the client is actually saying, yeah, I'm okay with that. And I see that you're still acting in my best interest. So that will be a significant change for financial professionals to have to deal with.
Okay. So just to rephrase that, you're saying because strictly speaking, there's going to be ways that they can take steps so that they're in compliance with this new ruling and, you know, they're not doing anything wrong, but you're just saying it might lead to some awkward conversations that haven't been so explicit before about disclosures and things like that. Am I following you?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's what I'm saying. And to be honest with you, when you stand back and look at this, okay, what it says to me is that unlike ever before, it's going to arm the consumer with the ability to sue a financial professional more directly. That, I think, is the biggest change in this whole thing. Because just for the mere fact that the consumer now, the client, you know, actually sees how much money is going to be made and actually has to approve it. You know, the hopes is that the financial product is going to work well. Because if it doesn't work well, you know what I mean? It could put the consumer in the position now. In fact, it does, to be able to sue the financial professional with more power than ever before.
Okay. Well, I think we're kind of running out of time on this episode. Is there any other thoughts you have on this that you think we should include in this train of thought that we're doing here?
Well, I just want to make sure that we get across to everybody that, well, I'll just be real clear. The things that you and I do, Bob, you know, this podcast, the way we speak on the podcast, where we're basically trying to explain to people some of the things that are going on in the financial markets and even explanations about the infinite banking concept, all those kinds of things. The writings of the LMR. As you know, we have a seminar that we do for the general public, the IBC seminar. We have the Nelson Nash Institute and all the educational information that we dispense from there. Those things do not fall under the Department of Labor ruling. So you and I are free to continue to speak to the general public, to speak to financial professionals in the very same way that we do. And in fact, the ruling specifically says that the Department of Labor approves of it, meaning that they want the consumer, you know, to get this as much financial advice as possible to make an educated decision on what to do with, you know, their retirement money. So I think it's something that we ought to at least close with, you know, this particular podcast, is that we're not under the rule with all of the things we do, and we actually have the blessings of the Department of Labor to keep doing what we're doing. Unfortunately, I do see that financial professionals now going forward are going to have to go through this new hurdle, and it's going to be very prohibitive for them to just have casual conversations with people about their retirement money without automatically now falling under the classification of a fiduciary and having to come into the rules and the regulations and the accountability that implies. And so many of the financial institutions that provide these financial products to these financial professionals will have all of that in their paperwork. In other words, it'd be part of the contracts that they have with these financial professionals, which pretty much places the financial professional in a situation now where they're the ones that are being directly representative of what they're selling, and they're going to be held accountable for it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you and I aren't in the crosshairs. That's good to know. But you're more seriously, you're saying because a big exemption or exception, I guess, to all this stuff is people providing information to the public that does touch on financial products and so forth. But if they're doing it in an educational capacity rather than, you know, a way that they're personally going to get a commission on.
That's right. That's right. So what we all always do, and I don't mind saying in this particular podcast, you know, we speak a lot of times about some of the disasters of these government qualified plans. And we actually suggest that there's other things that you can do. And so we'll be able to continue to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, with a clear path ahead for us to continue to do that. They want the public to get this information so they can make educated decisions.
Right. Okay, well, I think we should wrap things up then. Thanks, Carlos, for your research on this. And speaking of getting educated on all this stuff, remember, folks, if you want to learn more, if you like this kind of stuff, but I wish I could go look up the articles and things and go see the documentation of the stuff Carlos is talking about. Well, you're in luck. You just need to subscribe to the Laura Murphy Report. So for information on that, go to our website at lauramurphy.com. That's LARA-Murphy.com, and you'll see all the information. There's a bunch of free issues, samples of the Laura Murphy Report, so you can see what you're getting into. And I encourage you to check that out. Other than that, we'll see everybody next time. Thanks for listening.
You've just finished another episode of The Laura Murphy Show. Be sure to share this podcast with your friends and colleagues to do your part in building the 10%.
The Laura Murphy Show is provided with the understanding that the staff and contributors of LauraMurphy.com are not here and engaged in rendering legal, accounting, tax, or investment advice. On such matters, please consult your own professional tax, legal, or financial advisor.